welcome to the Mile 99 interview series with your hosts, Greg Larkin, Mike Turner, and Jessica Harris. Enjoy this episode, and we'll hope to see you on the trails soon.
Okay, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Mile 99 interview. I'm one of your hosts, Mike Turner. And the Mile 99 is a place where we can hang out with like-minded folks in our trail community, share our stories and achievements, stay connected, inspire each other, stay motivated. And I see the Mile 99 as kind of like a snapshot in time of who we are. But who we are is built on all those great stories lived before us. And we'll live on through the years, so all the stories yet to be lived. And I see us as merely the keepers of right now. And I think this is where we can share our story. Here tonight, we are recording on Zoom in front of a live audience. There's no takes, no breaks, no cuts. And unlike the trails, what is said here is on record forever. I'm joined by my co-host, Jessica Harris, and Greg Larkin. Jessica, how's it going?
Pretty good. I'm sure some of our friends just saw me desperately pleading for someone to help me learn how to make a campfire because I'm taking all four of my kids to a campsite. And as much as I run outside, I don't sleep outside. So I need some help, but we're planning. I have a list. We're going to have some fun this weekend. How are you, Greg?
Doing all right. Just got back from a 9-day, 4,000 mile road trip to Austin. The whole family's vaccinated, decided to take the plunge and buy a little vehicle to get us down there. Totally isolated. Never used a public bathroom once, which is pretty amazing. So we did a little break-in trip, and we'll be using it again as we head down to Arizona in a few weeks. And we'll be getting into that during this hour, I'm sure.
And then I will also be doing all the interactive stuff. So if you guys have any questions, we are live on Facebook right now. And then there's also a chat on Zoom. So if you have any questions, send them my way and we'll get them answered for you. And we have our Patreon. It's up. So if you guys want to kick a couple of dollars over to us to keep the lights on, that'd be great. Back to you, Mike.
All right. Lights on are good. So we are very excited tonight to be chatting with Jamil Curry. You know, he's a co-owner and CEO of Air Viper Running, race director, runner, filmmaker, fourth generation Arizonan, long distance hiker, dad, pusher of limits, both steep and high. I could go on. But we invited him here tonight to kind of talk about a couple of topics that our listeners have been dying to hear about, which is one, Barkley, and also two, the Kokodona 250. So those are exciting. So how's it going, Jamil? Welcome to the show.
It's going great. Thank you so much for having me. It's awesome to be here.
I'm excited. We're all excited to talk about this. So before we jump into things, you want to say, you know, the Javelina last year was my first Air Viper race. I don't know why. I just have never been down there, but it was my first. And we usually have lots of folks come down from Northern California. And in traditional years on an airplane, it'd be 20, 30 people on one flight going down from this area. We usually have a big showing. It's our last qualifier of the year, so we have a lot of folks head down that way. But this year was pretty quiet, and not a lot went down. But I saw that a race was on, so I was going. I couldn't pass that up. It was pretty awesome, and I loved it. And I did the Thursday night start, which was great. It was just a super, super race, and I'm glad to have gone down there.
Yeah, it's awesome to hear you made it out. Definitely a different Javelina. Since it was your first one, you'll have to come back for the real show and the full experience.
It was just quiet. Aid stations were either empty or like one person there. It was so different, so quiet.
I mean, I'm happy to hear that because that was the goal. So if they were bustling last October, it would probably be, we probably would have not been able to hold it.
No, it was organized and efficient and people were respectful. And everything was clean and sorted out into little tubs of food. And it was well organized. And this was a quiet and lonely, but well organized. Also, you know, I want to say that I know COVID has been hard for everybody. It's still going on around the world. It's just been hard for families and businesses. But, you know, I just say that I have a lot of respect for your company, what you guys have done, because through the, all this craziness, you did whatever it took to, you know, to make something happen. And so I mean, I just have a lot of respect for that. A lot of companies couldn't pull it together because it was a lot of different situations, you know, but you guys held it. So it was very cool. So when I started thinking about my next race, my 200, I couldn't think of a better company to support than you guys. And I signed up for your 250.
That's awesome to hear. Thank you. And we really appreciate the support from everyone in the community. And yeah, we love the Auburn family that comes down every year. And I found myself making my way up to Western States most of these years now. So it's really great seeing everyone.
And, you know, as far as 200s, I was hoping for 200, but I got 54 extra miles. So, hey, you know.
Yeah, a little bit extra. So, yep, it's all.
After 4 days, I'll have another day. How exciting, huh?
It's binge running at its finest. You know, no one's going to tell you to stop. Just keep going.
Just keep going. So I want to get into your guys' company. So Air Viper Running, you want to talk about your values, and you're surrounded by family and friends. I mean, it must be like pretty awesome. You go to your website, your parents, your brother, your friends. I mean, maybe chat a bit about your values as a race company.
Yeah, I mean, we're really a family. We are family focused for sure. It is a family business. So that is definitely in our DNA as a company. You know, my mom is at our office most days of the week and my dad will pop in, and yeah, it's pretty great. My brother, Nick, who was, alongside me for the first, you know, 5 years or so of the company, he works as a computer programmer, but he's still involved, you know, giving us some advice on like the tech end of things, which is really awesome having his perspective. And yeah, it's just a really great environment. We all love what we do. It's a passion-driven organization, and we really want to make the best experience for all the runners out there, all of our customers, and really give everyone who's involved as a stakeholder, whether you're a runner or an employee, just an amazing experience when you interact with us.
Yeah, I think that shows in your races just how much thought and how much energy and just the music and the people and the organization, and just a, well, every piece feels like it's really thought out. Like there's no stone unturned.
Thank you. We try.
So I know that last year was hard, you know, for, like I said, for everybody. So what are some of the struggles? And you guys pulled off some races, but everything was different. What were some of the challenges last year?
Yeah, it was just over a year ago. I mean, we were shut down by the state's orders, so we couldn't hold races. That's a pretty common theme now. So we had a total of a 4-month shutdown with no events. And how we've built up our organization, we support quite a few full-time people. You know, probably a year ago, it was something probably like 12 or 15 full-time and another 10 or so part-time, maybe 12, another 12 part-time. And it's grown since then. But yeah, to all of a sudden turn off our events, and we have them structured kind of every couple of weeks. So that keeps our lights on, and it keeps paychecks flowing to all these different families that rely upon us. So it was a lot of pressure on me to, you know, figure out some way to navigate through. And yeah, for us, it was a hard pivot to the virtual world. And, you know, we're really fortunate that the community supported us in that and got us through that tough period.
Yeah, the virtual world was pretty exciting early on. And Greg and I did a backyard challenge in 110 degree day in Auburn and almost died. It was pretty exciting. Pretty rough day, huh, Greg?
Yeah, that was a rough one. And I think I remember, Jamil, didn't you do some kind of like virtual thing on a rooftop or something like that?
Yeah, it was like the last day before we had our Arizona quarantine or lockdown. I did a marathon on the roof of our building.
Yeah, yeah. I think I remember seeing video of that.
That was like 1600 laps or something ridiculous on a perfect circle, basically.
Nice. No lasting hip injuries or anything like that.
Surprisingly not. Although like 2020 wasn't the best year of running for me personally. Mm-hmm. So maybe some can relate.
Yeah.
So what was it like, a tilt-up building with a big white roof? Like it was like an office building or something?
Yeah, I mean, it's an office building and a construction company built it back in the 70s. And then they added an additional piece, a helipad. So there's a helipad on the roof. And they had multiple offices in Phoenix and they would fly from office to office. And I'm assuming they used it when they flew to some of their subdivisions and developments. So, yeah.
So now you guys can like fly to your races as the director.
I mean, it's like in maybe like the 10-year plan, you know?
Yeah. Then this year, you guys have 43 races on your schedule on the website, at least for this year alone.
You counted them, huh?
I had to count twice because I had 41, 43. Yeah, that's a lot. So you have a lot of new stuff going on.
There's a lot going on. It is really hard to keep up with it all at this point. I feel like every day I'm just, yeah, gasping for air, like trying to keep a handle on everything. But yeah, we really do have just a great team. And yeah, I think the more I just empower the team, the better things will go. So that's the plan.
What are some of the different distances? I know they're not all, I mean, like you're known for, people know you for Javelina and Black Canyon is another one of our spring. It's our first long run. You guys have like our first and last long runs of the year are in Arizona.
Yeah, it's kind of turned into that. It's been great having like those big premier races, but we have a whole calendar of different types of events. And sometimes it's just a 50K. We've got one in Colorado that's just basically a hill climb up to the top of Kendall Mountain. It's like 12 miles round trip. And we've got a couple local series. So we have a winter series that's 5K up to 50 miles. And we've got a distance for everyone. So they're really more community-based events. I mean, we're starting to draw people in from outside Arizona, but it's really heavily Arizona. And then we've got a summer night run series. You know, we're not running 50Ks or 50 milers in Phoenix in the summer when it's 115 out. So we do some night runs and they're basically a party in the desert. It's kind of a mini Javelina, except, you know, even more ice and more lights, I guess, who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, it's great to have something for all the distances. I mean, not everybody. I mean, sometimes it's just fun to run any distance, a shorter distance. You know, run for half a day or a full day, but you know, not do the overnight thing. You know.
Yeah, and we want to meet people where they are, and some people running a 5K on trail or a night race, a night trail run, that's an intimidating thing for people. So we want to make it a welcoming environment and something that anyone can approach. And oftentimes, you know, they get exposed to the longer stuff and then they kind of make their way up into the sport, which I think is great. You know, if they so fancy.
Towards that end, I noticed I was looking at your website and you've got this community leaders concept, and it looks like, you know, various people that will kind of like bring people into the sport in various ways. Can you talk a little bit about that program?
Yeah, we have pre-COVID, we had a bunch of different group runs going on in Phoenix area. So like a track night, there's like a downtown Phoenix meetup run. We have also a Monday night trail run. And then we've got like our big Wednesday night Aravipa group trail run. So we meet up at all different trailheads throughout the year. And yeah, up until COVID, I mean, we were probably 8 or 9 years strong doing that every single week. We shut it down a year ago. And I think we're just talking about bringing it back now. So we'll probably start those up again soon and get the community back together. But yeah, we've got several different people involved that help keep those going each week.
Yeah, that's so cool. Just to see kind of like a race company, but then like really infiltrated and integrated with the community as well, and bringing people in. I mean, I think that's been one of the things that we've been, you know, trying to do too, is talk to people throughout the last year about, you know, community involvement, volunteering, all these different aspects. There's so much more to trail running than just racing or training all the time. And that's a lot of why we're here, is just the community aspect. And it looks like you've all done like such a great job kind of fostering that and bringing people up into the sport. So I love to see that.
Yeah, totally. And it all stemmed from the community that was already here when I started trail and ultra running. There was an awesome, tight-knit community of ultra runners that had been doing it. You know, I started running ultras in 2005, started trail running probably a year before that, maybe 2 years before that. And this is just an awesome, awesome group of people. And so we just wanted to kind of carry that legacy on.
makes me want to go to spend more time in Arizona, but I will. So
you'll spend a lot of time there soon.
Yeah. So let's get into that. One of the topics we want to talk about was your guys' newest and your longest race, the Cocodona 250. It's May 3rd, and I will be spending lots of time in the desert. Hopefully I can see through the tears and the pain, but we will see. So what, let's get into that. Where was that born out of, and how long has this been in the making?
It's like been so long that I don't even remember where it started, like where this concept began. But I knew I wanted to create, you know, something really epic and long lasting as kind of a legacy race, but also something that would just draw all these towns of Arizona together that are in central Arizona. So there's all these really cool towns. There's amazing mountain ranges that connect them. And we have trail running events in a lot of these different towns already. So it's really cool to tie a bunch of different Aravaipa courses together and visit all these historical towns and then connect different trail systems too. So it might've started hearing about the Black Canyon Trail when I started getting more involved with that. And their eventual plan is to have that go further north all the way up to Williams west of Flagstaff. So, but that's going to take maybe 20 years to get it up there in the permitting and the build out. So I was like, well, I don't want to wait 20 years to maybe follow the Black Canyon Trail all the way north. So we shifted and we thought, well, if we can connect Crown King and Prescott and Jerome and Cottonwood and Sedona to Flagstaff, that'd be pretty epic. And that's really how it was born. And just talking about the idea with friends, and the seed was planted and it just started growing from there.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And you grew up in Arizona. Like you said, you're a fourth generation you've been there forever. So these are all your places that you've loved all these years and grew up, huh?
Yeah. And I grew up in, you know, doing scouting. So it was always camping and backpacking in many of these places growing up.
Yeah. And we have a lot of gold mine history and silver mines up in that area. So a lot of similar stuff that we have in the foothills in California, as far as the mining history in the old towns.
Tons of mining. Yep.
So how's it been for the planning as far as the communities? Cause there's small communities. I mean, they're excited about, you know, the all the sprinter vans coming to town and
I think I don't think they fully grasp what it's going to be or what it could be in the future. You know, I have a pretty big vision for this event. And the goal of this first year was just to get them all to say yes and have permission to run through their town. You know, we're going to be going through downtown of all these places all throughout the night. So it's a big ask, I think, for some of these little towns. You know, Jerome is the most sensitive of all. And I think it's probably the coolest one of the whole route. So there's going to be, you know, we just got to respect all the towns, but especially that one. And what I hope happens is once they see us come through, they'll embrace us for the future and want to do more and get more involved and, you know, be proud of what these accomplishments are of the runners that are coming through, you know, and see the draw, like people coming in from all over the country this year. And I'm sure next year we're going to see people. I don't even know how many countries we're going to see, but I'm sure it's going to be a lot of different countries coming in to, that have never set foot in Arizona before. And it's going to be introduced to all these really cool towns as they go through.
Yeah. And we will link the website and also the runner's guide. Just for everybody knows, the runner's guide is very thorough on the rules. So we will bring our respect when we come, because it talks about parking. Don't park, like, respect the parking, respect the stop signs, respect the quietness. So let's all read the runner's guides. We bring our respect with us when we come to those little towns.
Yeah. And I think it's especially, like I said, especially important this first year. I mean, it'd be awesome to turn this into just a huge party in the future. But yeah, this year we just want to, you know, softly introduce all of these towns to the event and to the ultra running community.
Yeah. So the course, you guys have been working on the course. It's currently about 254 miles. The elevation gain is around 43,000. Is that kind of where
It's tough to tell exactly what it's going to be. There's been a lot of changes to the course since I ran most of it 2 years ago. So I think depending on the software you use, it's probably going to be in the upper 30s is my guess, maybe 40. I was saying in the pre-show, it's a little, we're all kind of going a little bit into the unknown here. We don't know how fast someone's going to run this course. We don't know what it's going to be like to link this whole thing together. And we don't know, what the weather's going to be like. So we'll see.
Yeah. I'm going to find the software that has the lowest elevation.
Yeah. There was like one track that said 25. And I think that was written on the website. And I was like, no way, because I ran 200 miles of the course and got close to 35 2 years ago. So, and I know it's changed. There's, a couple of the climbs were reduced, but then some were also increased. So it might even out.
Yeah. I think you got to go into it with an open mind and just know it's going to be long and hard and beautiful and just keep going. And we'll get to the end.
Yeah. It's going to be an incredible experience. Everyone who is taking part is running the same course, and that's the challenge and the beauty of it.
Yeah, some of the most beautiful things of the desert. I did a geology field camp in northern Nevada. And when you're out in the desert 24 hours at night, it's different. You get to see the entire life cycle of the desert. You think it's this dry, desolate place, but at night, it's so alive. It's so amazing. Some of the most beautiful things are out there at nighttime.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not just desert out here. I mean, we've got big mountain ranges too. So it's really a diverse mix of all kinds of landscapes.
So what are your, so I've been watching your on Facebook, you've been running pieces of the course and posting. There's a Facebook runners group where you're posting some stuff there. So what are you most excited to share with the runners? What spot, hill, or whatever?
I mean, there's so many. Sedona is going to be something special, I think, right in the middle of the whole route. I think I'm really looking forward just to running through some of the towns during the race and getting that experience in. I think that's going to be really, really, really amazing as well. All of it, pretty much. All the way to Flagstaff, just going to be great.
Yeah, I was just in Flagstaff last weekend. I should have driven to the finish line and taken a picture for Mike and said, this is your goal. You will get here. We will make sure you get here. I did not do that. I'm sorry, Mike.
Yeah. So Jessica will be pacing me, Jessica Harris. And she's gearing up, literally gearing up with gear. Because it's going to be 85. It's going to be blazing sun. It's going to be maybe snow. You need every piece of gear you can think of. You'll probably need it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I pre-ran it 2 years ago and we had rain all week and we crossed over Crown King and Towers Mountain. We camped a little bit lower in elevation and we looked back and it was like covered in snow the next morning. And then Steve Adderholt, our race director for the event, he pre-rode and pre-ran it the same exact week last year, and it was hot and dry. So we're probably in a drier, warmer spell this year, but hopefully it dips a little bit back down into the 80s for when we get out there.
Yeah, I like dry. Good. Are there any, I'm just going to ask you, are there any creeks that are notable for crossing, forging up to your knees or anything?
Yeah, the Verde River, I think it's mile 137, I'm going to say. I don't know if Steve's put out the long course description yet? He sent it to me to review. It might be going out this week. It's a great read. It's like an 8-page read, I think, but it describes just the whole thing. It's like, it got me so excited for it. But yeah, there is, you have to ford the creek basically at 137. I think most of the other ones, you're not going to get your feet wet, but even mile two, you're on the Black Canyon Trail and you're crossing the Agua Fria River, which is the creek you cross at like mile 39 on the Black Canyon 100K course.
I guess just think about how refreshing it'll be at 137 to have your feet wet. There's always a bright side, right?
Totally.
So as far as gear, obviously we talked about when we get that guide, we'll be able to plan out, you know, people are planning for every condition, but poles, I mean, your post last week said we probably should be having poles would be helpful even from the get go.
Yeah. I just ran mile 11 to 33 on Friday, and it's a lot of climbing. The first 50K has, I think, over 9,000 feet of climbing, and there's some technical miles in there. So, I would say poles to start, I think would be a smart move. There's technical uphills, there's technical downhills. And so I think it, you know, if it improves your climbing and it improves your foot strike, you know, keeping your feet happy and your ankles happy, I think, it's a good idea. And we are I'm putting a video out about that tomorrow on the Run Steep Get High channel. So you can see visually some of what you're going to be going over, and hopefully it helps.
Yeah, we'll link that to the show when we get that. We'll grab that link and put it on the note. So, because I'll be watching it for sure.
Yeah, it seems like I should probably be boning up too on like crew requirements and all that good stuff. And do you have like a list of required gear for the runners that they have to carry at all times?
There is a section about that. And I think the biggest thing to note, I got to brush up on it myself, but the biggest thing to note is at a minimum 3 liter capacity leaving mile 11. There was water to filter from. So if you do have one of the water bottle filters, which I've got a couple of them, they're really great. I would recommend bringing them. There's quite a few creeks along the way that you can dip into. So, you know, I refilled all my bottles on my run. I was out there for 7.5 hours, and it was really, really nice to have that. And we'll keep an eye on the creeks to let people know if that's something to count on.
Mm. Yeah, that should help a lot. Mike, I'm imagining you're going to be bringing more of the fast pack sized thing that you have there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much, Greg and I do a lot of running in the North Fork Canyon. So filtering water, you know, is pretty normal for us in the summertime. So we'll be prepared. I think the creeks will be a lot more shallow in Arizona if they even exist a month from now.
Yeah, I'm hoping for another rainstorm because that one could be drying up a bit for sure. But yeah, there's also, you know, I'm talking up the first climb a lot because I just think it needs to be respected, but there's also a lot of runnable miles later. So I think, you know, you don't always have to carry this. It's not like this crazy self-supported thing, but you know, we just want to warn people on that first one.
Well, I think it's just smart to be, these guys know me that I carry more than I probably need, but I've been carrying all the gear all summer and all winter. I've been carrying all my space blankets and baby sacks and my fast pack and all my water. I go on 5 mile run and I'll carry, you know, 300 liters, you know, whatever, just milliliters. You know, I've been carrying everything just so I'm ready.
No joke.
Smart.
Jessica can attest to, well, both of us a little overloaded every now and then, but hey, you know, it just builds some strength, right?
Yeah. I've been forcing myself. I like put my pack on when I'm like doing chores and stuff, cause I'm like, I forget, I have to be able to help you. Got to beef up all the gear.
It's going to be good. And just so everyone knows, you're on the list of entrants, right? Right, Jamil?
Yep. I'm doing it.
It's exciting. And you have, it's pretty exciting. Going to be out there checking it out yourself. I'm sure you couldn't pass it up.
Yeah, I think it's just kind of a unique opportunity. We found a great race director to come on and help get this event off the ground. And so I'm, yeah, very fortunate to be able to toe the line with everyone this inaugural year and hopefully help to kick it off. And yeah, I'll be really happy to run it the first year and then really happy to cheer people on the second, third, fourth, fifth. So it's going to be really awesome.
How are the volunteer situation? I know you've been in need. This is a long race, so I'm sure you need a lot more than you have. So how is that going, and how's the outreach, and what are the requirements, or are there any requirements for, like, some of the local races have requirements for people, vaccination requirements if you're going to volunteer or various stuff? What's going on in that realm?
Yeah, they're starting to fill up. As far as like experience, we of course love when people do have experience. But yeah, we want to get people involved in the event, and hopefully in the future we get maybe even non-ultra runners in some of these towns that want to come out and support in their backyards. We do have some training sessions coming up for all of our volunteers to acquaint them with, you know, what to expect. I think we're requiring, we're definitely requiring the COVID negative tests for our staff, but I don't believe so for the volunteers. I'm assuming a lot of people are starting to get the chance to get, you know, vaccinated right now. So I think that's, it's just continuing to help. We weren't even sure a couple months ago if we were going to be able to hold the race. You know, Coconino County, Arizona was a hot spot, and it's just, you know, the case counts have dropped dramatically to the point that it's more of a moderate to minimal type of a risk now.
Yeah.
And then we had, sorry, Mike, we had a question about what the food is going to look like. Cause we know the races around here are kind of struggling about what to do, the amount of waste with all these prepackaged things. And if there's any way around that, but do you have an idea? I know it's a little early of what the food situation is going to look like.
Yeah, we're going to be doing some videos about that. We've got a couple great just nutrition sponsors. We've got Gnarly and Goo providing different nutrition products. So, and then, but we also have an amazing meal plan set up as well. So there will be real food and prepared food at these stations. I mean, it's a requirement at these long races. And, you know, we've been doing this since last August, putting on events in this situation scenario. So we've stepped up our cleanliness, and we feel like it's, you know, not an added risk for what we're doing. But yeah, there is still a trend for more prepackaged, but it's not just all like snacks. There's going to be real food out there.
Yeah, because that's always tough. People like, you know, they like soup or, you know, a quesadilla or grilled cheese or whatever's for eating there.
Hey everybody, this is Greg Larkin, one of the co-hosts of the Mile 99 Interview Podcast. Just want to take a minute here to give a shout out to Krista Cavender. We just worked with her. She's a graphic design artist, and she redid our logo for us. We're really excited about it. We've put it out on all of our social media here as of late January, and we highly recommend her services. If you're looking for graphic design work, logo design for your business, something like that, please give her a shout. Her Instagram is Krista with a K, Cavender, and you can also find her online at kcavenderdesign.com. Highly recommended. She does great work, really clean, beautiful graphics. I think you'll be really pleased. I know we were. So as always, take care and we'll see you on the trails.
And what about like the sleeping situation for people? Because obviously, as we've heard from some other 200 milers, I mean, yeah, like people get out and they have to sleep maybe 3-4 hours at a whack. Sleeping stations seem to be fairly common in longer races. How are you handling that?
Yeah, we've got, it's 5 or 6 sleep stations, and we're renting out some camps along the way. So sometimes it is some, you know, like a big room with cots. Sometimes it's, you know, bunk houses. And then sometimes we have a bunch of tents, and we're setting up tents and cots for people to sleep for a few hours and then get up and carry on.
Cool. And there are requirements to being a liner, like a bag liner, some sort of like either a baby sack or I have a fabric bag liner, something like that to bring with you for these public areas.
Yeah. And then, yeah, we'll wipe down everything, you know, between uses, but yeah, I mean, it's great. We, you know, we have less people than I think we would in a non-COVID year. So, you know, probably going to have like 180 starters. So I think it should spread out pretty well and not get too crowded out there this year.
And places where there's a sleep station, there's also access for crew in the same spot. So you may have some folks that are opting to have their own people, their own little setup.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, a lot of people have their sprinter vans and other sleep options. I know, you know, my dad's going to crew me, so I'm going to have a little bed in the back of my car that, you know, I may or may not even use the actual sleep station. So I think you'll see a lot of that too. And I mean, when I ran the Tahoe 200 a couple of years ago, that's the only 200 I've done. And I think I slept 3 times in the race. One was a trail nap, literally in the dirt. One was in a Sheridan aid station for 45 minutes. And then one was at one of the sleep stations on a cot in, it was like in an indoor hall. So well, I'm sure that that's not necessarily recommended, but yeah.
So fun fact, I was at Armstrong Pass when you came in at the Tahoe 200. I was volunteering that year.
Oh, sweet. Which one was that?
What's that?
Where was that one?
That one was like South Lake Tahoe on the east side, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like, it's probably the hardest hardest aid station to access. There's like a really bumpy forest road to get up in there. I was up, and it's like one of the major aid stations with sleep station and the whole thing. And the aid station captain somehow is able to get a box van in on that road every year. I don't know how, but I just distinctly remember you coming in because I'd recognized you from like Mountain Outpost or something like that. And sweet. I think your family was there meeting you and stuff. And
yeah,
so it was pretty cool. It was just, if I remember correctly, like I was there for 8 hours and you and maybe three other people showed up in that time. Like, so it does get spread out in these races pretty much.
Yeah, for sure. And we're adding, kind of another day on the end of this thing. So it's going to be, it's probably might be a little lonely out there.
Hey, Mike, another lonely Aravaipa race.
I still talk about how lonely it was at night. I got to bring some music, something at nighttime, because you need something to do on that long. But, so at the sleep station or aid station, a lot of races require you carry a mask. So when you're at an aid station, you can put a mask up, or if you're sleeping, what are some of the requirements for the runners?
Yeah, we still have that in place this year, just because that's what we've been telling all the permitting agencies. So that will be in play this year. We'll be masking up around the aid stations and the sleep stations.
I have a question. Is there going to be live tracking?
Yep, there will be, every runner will carry a satellite device on their person. And so you'll be able to track people the whole way.
How's the service? I mean, the satellite tracking is pretty obvious in the canyons up here where we live. You can get lost in a satellite, but it's pretty open there, right? So there's pretty good satellite service.
Yeah, I think overall it shouldn't be an issue. I think we should have pretty good ground to sky view for the most part.
And the public will have access to an app or some sort.
Yeah, we'll have it on the homepage of our website, cocodona.com. We'll have it right at the top. And we are, I'm trying not to overpromise, but we are working on a live stream component of the event as well.
Well, I think it's just smart to, if they're great, if they're there, great, but have a plan. We got a walkie-talkie plan. So we're going to be set. We even have walkie-talkie code names. So we're going to be pretty set.
Yeah. And one of the cool things about this race course is you are going through a lot of towns, especially once the crews can start accessing the runners, which is just outside Prescott. Going through a lot of major towns, there's a lot of cell phone coverage. I mean, there's only really, once you get past that first probably 50 miles, there's really pretty great service overall to connect with people and check in. And it makes the crew experience, I think, great too. You know, there's going to be hotels and restaurants along the way to take care of yourselves or to feed your runner, local cuisine.
I think somewhere I read that some people do that. They get a hotel. That would be crazy.
Yeah. Whiskey Row. The aid station is literally at a hotel courtyard. So I think runners are booking rooms and you could just go upstairs and sleep at mile 80.
Yeah. Or end up in a bar in a little small mining town.
Yeah. You also might be taking some whiskey shots. Like that's definitely, if you can get there before 2 a.m., I don't know what time they open back up on a Tuesday, but.
Who knows? This is going to be exciting. Who knows what's going to happen? Pretty excited. Well, I'm excited about going out there and having my friends out there. It's going to be great. We're gonna have a good time. It's gonna be a fun race, and just I'm really excited about it.
Excited to have you. I'm getting nervous myself right now. It's a big thing to shoot to. Yeah, it's a big undertaking.
I'm nervous, and I'm not even running it. So I'm just nervous he's gonna get tired of me. Which, I mean, that's your fault. So you picked me. I mean. Yeah, I think it's going to be awesome. I've never been out there except like dragging through.
It's going to be pretty cool. So So we, the next topic to transition abruptly and not very smoothly, a lot of folks, you know, they've watched the Barkley and they know about it, anybody running. And this year was a big year because we had nothing else to watch and nothing else to track. So everyone was kind of had their eyes on it. A lot of people there. And so, and that's been a big part of your things you've been working on for, you know, a few years. People want to hear about that. How was that this year? Was it just maybe jump into that a little bit?
Did you guys even, did it catch you guys by surprise that it was even happening that early?
Well, I didn't mean, but maybe not, maybe because I don't follow as well.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah, it was kind of fun. It seemed like it caught some people off guard, but yeah, I mean, it was definitely a tough year. We saw this year, mostly domestic runners, not really many internationals. So some of the normal faces weren't there, but it started raining maybe around 8 p.m. the night before the race started. And we had a 3 a.m. start and it just stopped raining right when we got woken up, which I didn't really sleep much that night. I saw there's a film crew that was with Laz. I kept peeking out of the van I was in and torrential downpour all night. So it was just rattling off of this U-Haul van I was sleeping in. So I didn't really get much rest, but we got started. It wasn't a cold night. It was pretty warm out. So I started in a t-shirt, but you know, the night start is always challenging. And the fact that the trails had turned to streams definitely made things tough from the get-go. There was some fog early on. And then we came in from the first lap, really had pretty good navigation. I led a pack of, I think there was seven of us that did most of the first loop together, including Courtney and Liz and Maggie. And there was a few others. And was 2 hours slower than 2 years ago when I ran this, basically the same loop. So not a great start to the event. I was hoping to be maybe an hour slower and taking better care of myself, but I came in pretty beat up, maybe just as beat up as 2 years ago, but 2 hours slower. So not off to a great start. And then it just because of the 3 a.m. start, it was a really weird timing. So we made it back to camp in the middle of the afternoon. It was kind of hot out, headed back out for loop two. And I wasn't thinking about the how cold it was going to be that night. And we had another storm that came in and just decimated us.
How was, I know what I've seen in those races that if you end with somebody that may have a lot of value, but does it have a lot of value to start with somebody in a group, or is it better to be just trying to get the first loop done? What's the advantage? I mean, obviously what's the strategy?
Yeah. I mean, strategy, I think for those that have never been there before, you absolutely want to find a veteran runner that you can tag along with to learn the route. But for someone like me, I've been out there so many times, I don't necessarily need to run with anyone, but it sure is nice socially to do that. But yeah, I think in a year that I'm trained up better, I'm not necessarily going to make plans like that to stick around anyone necessarily, unless it really aligns.
Yeah, I've always had a question, and maybe I could have found this out by Googling, but since you're here, the loop structure. Now, for some reason, at some point, I thought like maybe there were different loops. Is it the same loop? You just do it washing machine style? And if that's the case in a single year, does that loop change year to year? But it sounds like maybe not.
Yeah, so each year has a single loop course. And then what can change is the direction of each loop. So this year it was forward loop, reverse loop, another reverse loop, and then a forward loop for four. So it was like, and then other years it's two forward, two reverse, or it can be washing machine. So that part, he mixes that up. The course will change year to year, and that course is not revealed to us until the day before the race. So that is the big unknown. We don't know what will happen next year. He tends to make a big shift in the course only every maybe 6 or 10 years where it will significantly change. And then it's kind of minor changes. And yeah, there might be a hint of a significant one coming. But we don't know. It could also just be a red herring and he could just be messing with us to keep us guessing for and like staying up late at night for a whole year.
But there's certain features, it sounds like, that are fairly consistent year to year. I think some of the climbs and that sort of thing.
Yeah, there'll be some iconic names of different things like Rat Jaw and Big Hell, the Bad Thing. Meat Grinder was one of the newest ones that is just a joyous time.
one of our local races, the Euchre Bar Massacre, one of our legends, Scott Martin, was out there. And man, that guy, it's such a tough race because he just destroys Euchre Bar Massacre. And he gets out there and he's destroyed. It's just such a next level.
Yeah, I ran with Scott this year, got to know him pretty well and hanging out after the race. He seems just awesome, so dedicated to training. It was honestly inspired me. I'm going to have to put Euchre Bar on the list after talking to him.
Oh, yeah.
It's like fun.
Oh, yeah.
Mike pulled me through that course last year and I was, but just the 25 miler, what did it take us, like almost 16 hours to do that? 15 hours, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, but the canyons, it's a canyon, everything's downstream or uphill.
Yeah.
So navigation is pretty simple. It's a V and the water goes to the left. So you don't have to really, you know, out there where you are, there's hills, different directions and different knolls and you don't know which way is north. So it's a whole different story, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's definitely more complex. A lot of things look the same in the folds of the mountains and the streams. It all blends together if you don't really know or haven't spent much time out there.
And we do have a question. Since you're familiar with the area at all, does any part of that navigation get easier each time?
Absolutely, yeah. And I've been going back out there like in between the race to just run the park trails. You can't run off trail outside of the event, just to learn the normal parts of the park. And I think it helps a lot.
And it just looks like it's so much brush and bramble, and just steep and bloody, and it's a mess, huh?
Totally. Especially when it gets wet and muddy out there, it just turns into a slop fest. So hard.
And the navigation of the fog seems like it'd be very challenging because at that point you can't see anything uphill, downhill, it all kind of falls together.
Yeah, like fog at night can be so disorienting. We totally messed up one of these descents and just kind of went off the wrong side of the mountain instead of going down the ridge. And it was one of the most straightforward, easiest parts of the course. If you were just in the daylight or just no fog, it would be really straightforward. And even me, with all the experience I have, totally got off trail.
Wild. Yeah. So speaking of your experience, I mean, I am interested, doing some of these really just next level races, beyond level, really, Barkley, other races you've done in your career, and now Cocodona. What is your mental process for handling these things? I'm always interested in kind of hearing about like sort of the internal stories going on, your motivation, your way of pulling yourself through. Maybe this will be valuable for people listening who are thinking about that next distance to tackle or something, and just how do they get through these dark spots? Like, what's your process?
Yeah, I think it's just the continuation of the process from getting into ultra running and wondering how far you can run. And the first time you go up to a new distance, it's a lot of times for me, it wrecked me and it brought me to my knees, so to speak. And it was really hard. And then I continue and run more 50Ks and 50 milers, and now it's not so hard. And so I'm continuing to look for my limits. And so that's why I'm attracted to the Barkley and, trying these 200 milers now and really tough 100 milers. It's just, to me, it gives me something to shoot for and be motivated to reach out to. And it's that apple out there to strive for, carrot.
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting, the process. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of us, me personally, I mean, the first time I heard somebody say, oh, I'm just going out for a short 18 mile run, that was kind of a mind blowing experience for me. But, as we sort of you know, eventually maybe progress to that level. Yeah. Like maybe that is a short run. And then you think about the 50K and the 50 miler, et cetera. And now the 250, like, what do you think the limits are for ultra running and trail racing in the future? I mean, we're starting to now get into 250. And I think there's a few other races I've heard of over the past few years that are even longer. I mean, where do you see this sport going? Is it more about distance? Is it about extreme course conditions? Like, where are we headed, do you think, in the next 10 years?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if we'll continue to see longer and longer races. I think we'll continue to see people push themselves. I mean, look at what Joe McConaughey just did on the Arizona Trail in the past 2 weeks. I don't know if you guys were following that, but he broke the FKT there by over a day, but covered 800 miles across Arizona in 13 days. So yeah, I don't know if it's feasible to put on a 13 day trail running race, you know, and staffing aid stations around the clock. But there's that's out there, you know, these long trails, and people are not just doing 800, they're doing 2000, 3000 miles of the PCT and the AT. So I think people are already doing it. Will the masses start doing it? I don't know. It's yet to be seen. Yeah. But I think that the 200 mile distance does seem to be something that, you know, more and more people are tapping into, and, you know, they do give, there is a lot more time, and it's a different thing. It's a different beast. You know, you actually need to sleep, especially, yeah, if you're going through night 4 and 5, you got to sleep and you got to have that part of your plan. And,
Yeah. Now, one thing that I'm sort of interested in coming, like people have heard me talk about this on the show over the past year. I mean, I come from a bike racing background. And so one of the things that, it was pretty common in cycling, and people know about the Tour de France and other big races. I mean, stage racing is a big thing in cycling. I've seen from time to time, like running stage races and that sort of thing. Is that something that, you know, your company personally would ever be interested in? Do you see that as a trend that might be a way to kind of get more extreme distances, but not in a continuous, you know, end-to-end race?
Yeah. I mean, we haven't like currently pursued that, but I think a stage race would be really, really fun, especially I think because of the social aspect of it, the fact that everyone's running something and then camping or spending time together with activities and meals and sharing drinks afterwards would be, I think, a really fun thing to produce and get people to come to.
Yeah, totally.
What does it look like, Greg? Is it like every night everyone sleeps like together, and what does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much, cycling stage races I used to do would usually be centered around a certain hub of an area. So you could, you know, rent an apartment or, you know, a condo or something for a week and go out and do your time trial, your, you know, city race or your road race or whatever it was on the bike, and then come back at night. Yeah. And then have a common area that your team could stay in. But it would be kind of interesting to have like a different concept, maybe like you were saying, Jamil, where maybe everybody's like at a campground together, you know, and hanging out afterwards. Like, we didn't do that so much on the cycling side, but that, you know, I think that would fit really well with the whole like trail running mentality. You know, everybody's just hanging out afterwards and getting up the next day and doing it again, you know?
I haven't had a chance to attend it, but the Trans Rockies is like that.
Yeah.
I've just heard people that have gone rave about that, and they say it's really, really awesome.
That I've heard of that race. That sounds really cool to me. And I think just the idea of getting yourself motivated to do a race, rest, eat, and repeat is a different mental challenge, I think, than just going like all out in one big push like you would do at Cocodona. You know, it's like you have to get yourself out of bed the next day and say, I got to do this again, rather than just keep pushing. You know, it's a little different.
Yeah, totally. And I think, yeah, some people will like race those really hard and then have to recover and do it again the next day, where, yeah, these 200 milers are just, you know, no one's telling you to take a break and sleep tonight. You can kind of manage that and have that part of your strategy. You know, some guys that and gals that don't need much sleep, they just keep right on going.
Mike, what's your strategy?
We've had a few people on the show talking about Moab 240, and, you know, I don't know if I have a strategy yet. I'll sleep an hour or two at night. Maybe I'll sleep during the day. I'm just going to have to see how it goes. And it's all new. It's all new distance. So you don't know what's going to happen on day two or three. Like, I've been out overnight on hundreds. You're out one night. The next day you're done. This is like, man, 4 or 5 nights.
Yeah. Is there any strategy you're going to bring from like the Tahoe 200, Jamil?
I'm probably just going to go for it and just like sleep when I'm absolutely tired. But we did this, a really great little chat with Ben Light and Steve Adderholt. And he was talking about different strategies, like sleeping 90 minutes a night, sleeping, you know, 4 hours a night, or just going straight through.
Nice.
I've heard people that have said skip the first night, and everyone has a different strategy. You skip the first night and try to go the second night. I think it's just going to be trying something out. But I think you'll know when you need to sleep, because if you've been on long races, your mind will start to look for places to sleep. It's inevitable. Your body just tells you when it's time to sleep. Like, I've seen twin beds out in the Tahoe Forest that weren't actually a twin bed, but I swore they were when I went to bed.
Well, Mike, you're a parent. Like, just go back like 15 years when you weren't, or 20 years ago when you weren't sleeping. I mean, you'll be fine. We operate on like 2 or 3 hours of sleep a night for a decade, and then we're good.
Yeah, I've been in adult, more sleeping mode lately, getting my sleep in. So we'll see.
Nice. And Jamila, you are a parent. So how do you manage some of this long training? I mean, I feel like you're kind of already at this certain level, and you can just kind of maintain that. But how do you manage that with a family and a very successful business?
I mostly let the training is the first, like one of the first things to go usually. So unfortunately, it's been, a low training. Hopefully Barkley was a good training for me and I'll get something from that. And then, I'm trying to scout some pieces of the course. But really I'm going to just have to kind of rely upon just my years of doing this sport and long distance hiking. You know, I hiked the Arizona Trail back in 2008. So this is more, it kind of starts to bleed into the idea of through hiking and fast packing, where, you know, you're just putting in really big days. You're taking, you know, some sleep at night and some rest, and then you get back up and do it the next day. And it's amazing what the body can do and what the mind can do. You can just keep going.
Yeah. And this is just a short season of life where we have young children and we're racing. Can you just wait and how amazing we're going to be in 10 years when we can sleep? I mean, this is just going to be amazing.
Totally.
Well, we've kind of come to the end of the show. So typically what we do is we do a quick little rapid fire question, just so our guests get to know you a little bit better, and to wrap it up. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Nothing too crazy.
Okay.
Okay. Road or trail?
Trail.
Bucket list race?
Tour de Jean.
Oh, awesome. Your favorite post-race meal?
It would probably be Thai food.
Oh, that's a new one. Usually we hear a lot of burgers and beer. That's interesting. Like that. And then the most controversial thing I'll ask you. Among all of the hosts, we got to know, cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Dogs. Oh, man. All right. We're keeping score. Greg, you're getting the boot, man. People like dogs. No one. I have both. So I'm neutral.
I'm getting hammered here. Jeez. I even added the special Charlie cat to my.
I know, man. Here. He's trying to get points and everything.
Yeah, but he decided to bail on me. So, you know.
Awesome. Thank you so much. That's so fun.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on tonight, Jamil. It's been great. I'm excited to talk to you. We appreciate you coming on and spending some time, and hopefully some folks have some questions answered about the race coming up, or just kind of have their, you know, more planning. But we will link together. There's a lot of information that you have out, that's coming out. We'll be certainly tracking that, and we'll link all that to the show. But thanks for having you on. I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thanks so much. And we're looking forward to seeing you all in Arizona soon.
Yes. And Jessica, where can people find us?
Our handle on everything is The Mile 99 Interview on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And our website is www.themile99.com, 99interview.com. Make sure that you rate and review us on all of our podcasts, anywhere you download. That gets us all the good things. So do that.
Awesome. And show's coming up. We're excited that we're going to talk to Maria. She's here tonight. One of our favorite people in the world. She's coming up in 2 weeks. That's exciting. So Yay. Again, thanks again, Jamil, for coming on. Everybody, thank you. And we'll see you on the trails.
Thanks. Bye.